question Ms. Monroe has asked, and we'll do the virtual training answer here, is what kind of insurance coverage you have for space flights. What I was saying was that for Hughes employees, they're covered by a corporate life insurance policy, the face value, which is currently twice your annual salary. And I think there's a clause that says if you're in a company business, you get, and you're killed, you get paid twice that amount. And there's another clause about being in flight status or something like that, and it's usually for corporate pilots, I think. But my guess is that if something happened, that could be pulled in also, and I don't know the amount of that. The other thing is there are insurance policies for the people who fly the shuttle, and you can take those out. And I don't really, I've heard about it, but I don't know much about it. I don't know if Hughes has done that or not.
And, so you didn't have to sign anything about becoming an officer?
Oh, I signed that I would not make anything other than my normal salary in this whole thing for 6 months after the landing.
No.
By that time, you're old boots. That's what they could get into.
No.
They really don't want you to profit from what you're doing. So, for example, if I wanted to write a book, I could write a book and publish it 6 months later, and they wouldn't do anything. Now, I'm sure Hughes would want something to say about that, since I'm really going with some Hughes representative.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hmm. Wow. What do you think of some of the pressures of having a couple being involved with the whole program?
Well, I think it's a new experience. Mm-hmm. So that's going to bring new challenges, new opportunities, and you're in a new situation, so that there's just, you know, new things you have to adapt to. Here we are. For this, Jen's ever lived away from home is with me, and I was just all 20 miles from her parents or something. Here we're 1,500 miles away from her family. That's the first time in her life she's ever done that. You know, I've been away from my folks for a long time. Mm-hmm. So that's not, Jen's dad's really sick.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, there's a whole set, you know, you get pulled, you know, should she be with her father, should she be with me? And that really was a strain. Yeah, that was a tough situation. You know. So there's strain from that. There's a strain from being a guy that suddenly people who don't even know you now know you and watch what you do and expect certain behavior which may or may not be something you normally do, and so anything you do is under very close scrutiny. So you have to make sure that not only do you do what's right, but that you appear to do what is right. And that's much harder, because doing what's right isn't hard at all. It's making it so that there's no way it could be misconstrued as doing something. So that's a new, that's something that we typically don't have to deal with. That's true, and that's partly been our choice. I mean, we could have come down and lived here the same type of life we live in L.A., which is really not that social. You know, we both go to work, we come home, we spend our time together, and, you know, we may go see the folks, or we may go see somebody on the weekend, but there are times when we don't see anybody for, you know, a couple of weeks, and then, you know, we'll have people over. But, you know, we tend to be pretty much homebodies. And there's been a lot more togetherness with Greg and Marcia than we would have normally at home. And so there has been less private time. It's interesting, you know, work hours have definitely been more regular, and I work fewer hours here than I do at home. I mean, yeah, it's strange. I mean, it was weird. The other morning I got up, you know, and I was cranking out the door. I was like, boy, this is really early. It's 6:45, you know? And I was ready to go to work. Well, normally I'm at work at 6:45 working. Mm-hmm. And, or, you know, we're heading out the door and, you know, been up for a couple of hours and charging on. In fact, it's late for me to leave home at 6:45. So, you know, California here, you know, just spraying a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think part of the difference is Jen's time is very different at home. Most of her time, you know, during the day, spent working. She's got a full-time job. It's obviously got a lot of stress and strain to it. And she hasn't had that here, but she's had a whole new environment trying to run this household, trying to get everything organized. We buy Dakota. I mean, that's a full-time job for two people to keep track of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so she's had a lot to keep up with there. So on the surface, if you look at just the number of hours that I'm at work, and even more, if you look at just the hours that NASA says I have to be there, we ought to have the greatest tan since Zonker in Stoonsbury, I think. This is a new program for Hughes, and a lot of it is not well defined. From the day-to-day, you know, PR is not a thing that Hughes is really, you know, has used. I mean, you know, my guess is that, you know, I never worked for them, but, you know, some company like General Motors or General Electric or something, you know, they run a constant campaign to get their name in front of the public,
mm-hmm.
know what they want to do, and, you know, they got people who are experts at it. And, you know, we've got some really good people working on this, but there isn't the historical background. It's always easier to do something the second or the third time. You know, first time out, you sort of, you know, go, oops, you know, should have done that differently. Okay, we'll retrench and go here. So we've been feeling our way through that and trying to understand, you know, what does she want to do with this whole thing? Do we want to make a big deal of it publicly? Do we want to just quietly go up and fly and not do anything with it? How does this affect the whole purchasing of you, you know, or the change in the medical physique, or ownership by somebody else, and, you know, that has things a bit up in the air right now. They're not sure. Nobody's usually sure what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So that tends to, when you don't have a clear direction, people tend to circle their wagon and just sort of fall tight.
Yeah.
I mean, I can answer questions for a long time.
This is great. I know, this is great. This one.
And this one's for you.
This one's for you guys. What, in terms of the pressure of a couple who's involved in the space program, what do you guys feel are some of the pressures?
You are looking at the lowest key, layback people you ever met in your whole life.
What?
Good. I don't
feel
any pressure.
Really? Not to entertain or
anything
like that.
The only pressure that I feel is to make sure that we invite all those people who we think should be invited.
Yeah, I worry about that.
That is the
making the list and making sure that the families feel should come get the invitation here, and that's probably about the worst part.
And that was limited to 50?
30.
No,
was it originally 50?
Uh-huh.
Or did I miss?
No, you. Then it was skinny down.
That's what I thought.
Do
you think it was put down because Charlie was in?
No, I think that's just a normal. That could not be too far from the truth. But NASA now only provides for 30 people. However,
mm-hmm.
there are a number more. But because Hughes has the capability to have people in the VIP viewing area.
Mm.
They thought it would be nice if we let them use the extra spots because they don't really have all that many spots. They just have 10, they only put 120 or something like that.
But this is current. It's just
yeah.
an amazing pressure right now.
No, we're,
I feel it at the end of it right now.
Just kind of taking everything in stride.
Mm-hmm. Don't scare me with pressure.
Big thing. What was it like to, watch the launch? Can you, you guys,
I think it was good for the two of us to be there together to watch a launch so you know what to expect as opposed to being there for the first time alone and having it and not knowing your husband or whomever it is on the other end of that thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was expecting it to be a lot quieter and a lot less noisy than it was.
Yeah.
And it was kind of rumbling.
I didn't realize the whole ground was going to shake 4.5 miles
away
from me. You're standing at these beaches and then, everything moves. And that, it wasn't scary, but it was just unexpected.
The power.
Yeah,
you watch it on TV and it looks powerful. And you see the smoke and you see everything else. But when you're there, it's different. It just, the power really hits you. I mean, it's awesome.
It's kind of filtered by what you see on TV. Everything seems to go slower,
mm-hmm.
and it's quite a bit quieter. And when you're there in person, you
mm-hmm.
see it all at once, and it's very, very noisy. The flame
quickly.
Is quite spectacular, and it goes quickly. I didn't expect it to be all over with that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And that was
yeah.
the thing that, when I told you, I went to that launch before, and the thing I remember saying was that the thing got up and got going really fast. And I told everybody that, and I was thinking about it. Everybody still was surprised at how fast it gets up and it's gone.
Well, those boosters are often like 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, 2 minutes. The solid
boosters
are gone. I mean, it's 10 seconds and it's out of sight.
And it was cloudy Sunday, so it was out faster than it was.
Hey, that's Texas. Okay, how do you guys? How do you two feel about having another woman on the flight?
It's no problem with that at all. It's just another member of the crew.
Mm-hmm.
And very capable.
She is
one of the most.
I've heard. Yeah.
Oh, baby.
Well, she is, there's no question that she is absolutely capable of doing the job that she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no question about it. She is very bright.
She's a real nice person.
And
very conscientious.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting today on the descent. She's the mission specialist that sits by the door. So if you have an emergency egress to the door, it's her responsibility to keep the door open.
Mm.
You know, the door, it's not Rube Goldberg, but I mean, it's not like opening one of these doors. And the guy says, okay, here are your doors. You know, and Shanna sat out and she played with it. She put it all back together. She played with it. And then we went over the real mock-up and she played with it about 3 times there. And you could just see her. I mean, she wanted to know how that thing worked exactly. And she was focused in. Didn't matter. Everybody else was sort of, you know, just talking. What's going on? She's sitting there playing with the door. And
turned everybody else off.
Just focused in. And, you know, most of the guys explain something. They go, yeah, you know. And she says, well, why does this work this way?
Curious.
Yeah.
Well, I think the word is not, well, also curious, but understanding of what goes behind everything.
Yeah.
And what
so that if something didn't go right, she could figure out why it didn't go.
And I think through a situation like, if you get to this and this doesn't happen, then what is the next thing you do next? And so it's this way through the whole mission. The one thing I've watched him with is the St. Thomas Floyd. I watched, and she kind of runs with the planet. And it's in every step of the way. If there's something wrong that would affect the deployment, they talk it over and make sure that they understand that at this particular point, here are their options if something else were to go wrong. So they're always looking ahead to the next problem that may happen. Even the problems sometimes, and the problems don't often happen, but they're always thinking ahead that what if this happens? And they
mm-hmm.
understand completely what the thing is that they're interfacing with. And that's just goes through the door. Is that she opened the door, she closed it, and then when they explained it to her and then they went over to pry the door and it didn't behave the way she expected it to, she asked the question, well, why doesn't this have a, well, this kind of a pressure point as you go around the circle? And she said, well, why doesn't this have it? And the guy said, oh, this is not like the flight door. And mm-hmm. So, you know, it's clear that she understood what the guy had said. She's very, very attentive. And it was in her data bank now that when she replayed it, she was looking for certain things that happened and that did not happen. And that's true with the whole crew, is that they understand what they're doing. They're not just doing it because somebody told them to do it. They understand why they're doing it and what goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think through all the situations very quickly. And especially these where there's where something critical happens if they don't understand what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And all the moves are orchestrated over something else.
Any reason why
they're
training on stuff that doesn't work well?
Well, this would just happen to be it's not that it didn't work, it had been used so many times that it had lost the detent or this pressure point.
The trainer we were doing it on really wasn't designed to have to simulate that.
That's correct, too, because we were in the lower fidelity mock-up of the orbiter, where the high fidelity mock-up of the orbiter did have the detent in it, and we couldn't use that at the particular time, although we had scheduled some of it run over late in other lessons.
So when the client did get over there, the crewman that had to break out the window, pop the window, at least if you go up the other way, we're up doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Three of them, Chan was down playing with the door.
How would you guys feel if they were going out? If it was your wife that was going out?
I always have to think I had a 3-month vacation also. Never thought of that. That's interesting. I'm sure that if they were selected, they would be qualified. I wouldn't have a problem with it at all.
I think it'd be exciting.
Yeah. I think I would be as excited for them as I am excited about doing it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the way Marsha feels. She feels, I think both Jen and Bill feel the excitement that I feel.
Mm-hmm.
I think being close to it, I think everybody is really excited about it. And I think that's one of the things that happens at NASA is that even though a lot of those people don't get to fly, that they're really just supporting the crew. And I guess I use just in quotes.
Mm-hmm.
But they are excited to be that close to the space program. And when a launch does go off, it doesn't make any difference who it is. They have a number of TV cameras, and they're all there watching the launch because they are all excited about the space program. It's interesting, when we were training, doing one of our, did you tell her about the training?
Mm-hmm.
When we were doing, I forget, one of our simulated ascents in the 1G trainer that you saw this afternoon, we just finished, and we finished one part of the session, kind of began a break, and the guy said, hey, the launch of 51C is about to happen. So everybody came down off the 1G trainer, the trainers and the crew, and sat there and were watching it just as intently as if it were their own launch.
That was the military one in January.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't know up until 9 months before launch when it was going to launch.
Yeah, I remember the news on that.
That was really an interesting experience watching. I mean, that's the same bird that these guys are going to fly on. Mm-hmm. So it's their bird. And here you are, and what I find being the backup is that a lot of this, you know, is interesting, but it isn't something I'm probably ever going to get to do. And so it sort of comes in and out as how real it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's something I'm intently involved in, but that activity may or may not have anything you have to do with flying. And that day we're sitting there and we're practicing that, and everybody's getting buckled in, you know, and okay, going through the checklist, you know, and flipping switches and all this stuff, you know, and then we walk out and we watch this launch, and we go down and watch this launch. We've seen launches on TV. You suddenly realize that the 7 people you've just been in this thing with are going to be on that thing in 2 months, and doing that, and what we just did was what they're going to do. It became very real at that point.
And being right at
me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was.
Well, there are times this program when it's not real and when it's real. And today was a real time because you put on the exact clothes or as close to the clothes that you're going to wear at launch. You had helmets on just like you're going to wear at launch. You were on for a short period of time. You were on the orbiter oxygen system, and then you went directly to your portable oxygen system, and you did exactly what you would do in case there was an emergency. And you know, for lack of any other reason, just change the surroundings and put that particular orbiter someplace, and you would be doing exactly what you'd be doing on home state for whatever day that would be.
Tends to really focus your attention. I mean, I remember walking out of that this afternoon and saying, I haven't thought about anything for the last 3 hours except this. You know, didn't matter, you know, experiments or, you know, what we're doing tonight or anything. Yeah, everything was just focused right there on that one activity.
When I was coming down the side of the orbiter, the last thing, all I was focusing on was where to step, what key to use, what to pick up, and what steps to do. And when I was sliding down the side of the orbiter, all I was thinking about was sliding down the side of the orbiter. All I could see in front of me was the orbiter. And focusing all my attention on the moon. What was it called? Becoming Genie. I'm not sure what it was. But I was blind genie. That's what it was. And I was, you know, all my attention was right there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people could be around, you just forgot all about them. They were just focused on this one particular thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which is hard for me because I'm online wanders a lot. As people who know me will say, well, that's good.
Hmm.
The F2
went up on
the 10th. 41
Delta.
41 Delta.
Lisa F2. Two was the first one to launch.
Right. And where did that go up?
When?
And which
September.
Let's see. It went up. The launch was the 30th of August.
Okay.
Playing games week.
Yeah,
I haven't heard. Yeah, so I think it went out the next day.
Yeah.
So it's
the launch
right around the first of
the launch on August 30th.
Right.
Which one was that?
That was F2.
I mean, no,
Columbia?
Discovery?
Right.
It's the first flight of Discovery.
Okay.
So are they all going to Discovery?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then F1 went up. When was that launch?
November.
They live in infamy.
That was the case.
That was the only time Marcia's on a vacation.
Yeah.
Was
it was
the 8th.
It was the
7th. Well, I didn't
for 8th, that was the last. And that was Discovery, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And both of those crews have 7 members?
No.
Let's see. No. Let's see. No.
First one had 6. The second one had 5. F2 in August had 6 people,
mm-hmm.
and 51A had 5 people, because that was recovery mission.
Okay.
It was launched
3 and recovery. It launched,
mm-hmm.
launched 2
those
and recovery.
Explain how they
numbered. And they tried to come up with a new numbering system to simplify this.
Oh.
So the first digit is the fiscal year in which the launch is originally intended to take place. So fiscal year starts October 1st, okay? So October or November of 84 was fiscal 85, so that's why the 5,
okay?
The second digit is the launch site. The 1 means Cape Canaveral, and the 2 means Vandenberg.
And what means Vandenberg?
2. So if you had,
if
like
you
62,
had
they'll use that in 86 or 87.
Okay.
So
51 and an A?
Is the first scheduled launch of that fiscal year at that site. And
they didn't start this until this one here? Mm-mm.
41 was the first one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
41D.
I'm not sure.
Oh, I'm not sure when they started that.
Yeah.
They used to be, you know, 1 through...
It used to be STS 1 through N.
Mm-hmm.
And then
got as high as something.
Mm-hmm.
And so they used to find some people that still call them
STS
13 or 17 or whatever, and other people call them this. That's why you can get, like, 51E is going to launch before 51D, because it was originally scheduled after it. Once you get an F, once a flight gets a number, it stays.
Even though it may go later.
Regardless of when it goes.
Okay, so. Yours is 51D?
Right. Because it is in fiscal year 85 to come on in
Cape. And it's the fourth one.
It was scheduled to be the fourth one.
And even if D&E switched. No.
Yeah.
D&E had already switched.
It would be C&E.
No.
C&D.
E and D. E now is before D.
Yeah.
But originally D was before.
Yeah.
There's 50 launches. Five-year launches.
Went
A, C, E, D.
Oh, that's good at that.
No, that's it. Yeah, that's what I said. The letters are the original order of plan launch.
Okay.
And then when things change, they don't change the letters. They just come out next sequence.
Okay.
Well, that's if he doesn't.
I do.
If you do, you're one of the few people in the universe that understands that.
I do.
That.
Okay.
Indeed. Okay.
You can think about doing that just a moment ago.
Oh, I know. What was the funnest test that you got?
The funnest test.
And which one did you enjoy the most? Which one did you take the most? Those kinds of things.
Why didn't we any
experience.
Of them?
Experience. You liked them all, but which one did you like the best?
I like the 0G black and white.
Did you?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's something I never... It's something that I've never, ever experienced before in my whole life, and it was just a new and fun experience. It was fun because it was just fun, because it was like a carnival ride, and it was fun because I didn't know what to expect.
Uh-huh.
Not in the slightest. Uh-huh. And I still have great difficulty explaining what it is to feel weightless, because you can't explain it, because it's
different
not,
from water.
It's not like water. It's it's kind of like you're in a dream and you're floating, and you can turn in a circle, or you can turn upside down, you can turn sideways. It's not like free falling, because when you free fall, you're always going down. In this case, you weren't going up. It was you're not going down.
When you went upside down, your blood rushes to your head, right? You can't stay
no,
up.
No, because there is no up or down.
There's just nothing.
In zero gravity, there is no up and there's no down.
Weird.
The other thing is, it was when you're floating and floating like that, the first thing you want to do is to use your arms. Forget it. There is nothing to grab.
Unless you have webbed hands.
Yeah.
Not going to go too far that way.
And it took me a longest time to figure that out. And what you do is you relax and you try to find two objects, solid objects, stationary objects, on either side of you, so that you can use those as a point to push from.
Ping pong ball.
Yeah.
Do they have handles inside?
And it turns out the floor to ceiling height is such that if you extend your arms and your feet and your legs, that you can just barely touch the ceiling and the floor at the same time. So that's how you walk along. You could actually walk on the ceiling.
You don't have magnets on the bottom of your feet?
No.
They have magnets on the bottom of the feet.
I've seen suction cups. And I've seen Velcro
sure
pads.
They were magnets, but they were something.
Well, I saw some feet somewhere in the tour last day or two.
Kind of like
but
or something.
Well, the reason I'm surprised at that is that magnets are heavy, and the things that they're attracted to are steel and iron, which are very heavy. Most of the fixtures are made of aluminum or something, which is the other non-magnetic thing. That's why.
Yeah,
that's
right.
I'm not. It may have looked like a magnet, but I'm not sure what it was.
I was trying to think. They had that in that film. I think
they said it might.
I thought they said it was like
Velcro.
Velcro
was.
I think.
How many yards?
No, there are a lot.
I saw everything.
Everything floats. You can either use tape or Velcro, and Velcro is just a lot better material. And you take a look at what we have today, shoes, Velcro.
Oh, yeah.
All like the, some of the, raincoats we have have got Velcro in the sleeves and that kind of stuff. So it really is great stuff.
What was your least favorite
thing? I didn't have any.
It
liked
must be something that you liked that quite as much.
No, I kind of, it was all, I liked everything because it, most of it, well.
23 times.
What's that?
That's too biological, I think.
Yeah.
Trust me, I'll take care of you.
Because it was all new and interesting.
What else did you like?
Oh
yeah,
that was
you are looking
fun.
At
really?
The massive world
champion.
When we issue a challenge, to see who can put out a dry chemical. No, it's not dry chemical.
Oh yeah, what was
CO2 it? Chemical, CO2 chemical, CO2 gasoline fire with CO2 fire extinguisher. Or the CO2 fire extinguisher.
Nailed that sucker.
And how many seconds?
We did so fast they didn't have a clock starting by the time.
Ah.
That was the fastest
we've ever seen that day. Okay. I mean, we were all business. Fire was off.
That was it for the week. That was the only business we did all week.
And that was all eight of you?
Oh, we did
a team of two.
Oh,
you are looking.
Two of you. Ooh, Hughes does it again.
Oh, that's great. That was really fun, I mean, because it's.
Where else did you get to fight a gasoline fire?
I don't know.
Except that if you
were
drinking
it, the 4 foot ones were.
Look at this, the softest ride.
Nobody loves the fire.
You and your sheet metal and gasoline.
Yeah, this is great.
The one that just played with it.
So those things were.
Hey, we're big!
The little ones, they're bigger. You think of a barbecue, and you like a barbecue, you put a lot of stuff on it. You get some pretty good sized
plates.
Let's put this one to shame.
This thing is 4 foot, I mean, as big as this table, bigger, a little bit bigger, square. The plane shooting up, maybe from here to this,
About 10 feet?
I'm not sure if they were 10 feet out of the 4 foot one.
It was toasty. It was a cold day, and the planes were toasty.
Okay, so you take that, and that's, you definitely know something's going on.
Yeah.
And then you get this thing that's 20 feet square, which is, from that wall over here, something like that, filled with gasoline and burning, and you stand like, we were standing here, and the fire is where that wall is. I mean, we were that close to this thing, with a hose, and you're standing there, and you're looking up, and all you see is
about 4 feet.
And it's interesting, it was interesting.
Yeah.
I could see more from my perspective. The guy was behind it, holding the hose with the two other fellows. But when I was holding the nozzle,
everything was focused right on what you're doing.
Right, and so what you do is the intent is to spray the, force the fire aside, so people can walk through the center of the burning liquid. And so what you do is you focus on what you're supposed to be doing. And while I didn't see anything, while I was fighting the fire up in front, but when he was fighting, they had a beautiful fire vortex.
Like a
tornado.
Yeah.
It was
gorgeous.
I never saw
it.
No, he never saw it.
I'm sitting there, I'm the closest one to it, by a couple of feet. Right. And, we get all our oxygen masks on it. Well, wasn't that great fire tornado? That was sitting right over there by your side. Never saw. I was sitting there making sure that water's on that and squirting this thing out. And it really does. Your attention.
You can really.
You can really just focus.
And I think that is a clear indication of what happens to the crew is that they have specific tasks and they focus on those tasks. And it's business. There's time for fun. And time for looking out the window, but there's time for business. And when it comes to business, they're all business.
My impression is that if you were not paying attention to that firefighting, somebody could have gotten hurt.
Yeah.
They had real firefighters there that were safe, but if the wind was whipping around and we were coming from one side and they almost had to go from the other side because the wind was changing direction. Well, if you weren't paying attention to that and you just started, messing around, I could see how somebody could get hurt. So it tends to make it easy to focus your attention. All but Jen and Marshall were here at home, and see a big puff of smoke.
Nah, that's not bad. They're putting out little electrical fires with little extinguishers.
Wrong.
Cloud.
No, this is for if there, if at the case,
just as in case that
there was
right.
some kind of fire that you know what to do. What you would not be fighting the fire,
get out.
But you know what the firefighters were doing so you could get out of it.
A lot of it is preparing, just that, but you don't see things for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's just, yeah, because you can mess it up here and it doesn't, you know, doesn't hurt. If you got a chance, or, you know, next time, you've already gone through the learning curve. And yeah, I did this wrong last time. I do, you know, think about this,
mm-hmm.
and the rest of it's going to be easy or whatever. And
mm-hmm.
just charge on.
What was the first step?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't recommend just 100 candidates. That's really the way I felt. I really enjoyed everything. The 0G flight, it should have been the most interesting and most fun, and it wasn't for me, obviously.
I know.
But, I mean, conceptually, that should be the thing that's the most different. And I found it really frustrating, you know, that all I did was sick. And, you know, I wanted to have the time. And I didn't feel bad, except that I just had no control over what my stomach wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at that, you know, it wasn't like being seasick where, you know, I wanted to just die. I was trying to find a bigger bag. And
the other thing that's really nice is that you think of all the people in the United States, you think of all the people, and you are one of the, and I don't want, the word might be selective, you're one of the very few who are able to train in this environment. And it's just a lot, it's just a big kick because you really don't, you aren't going to get this kind of training anywhere else. So it's just a lot of fun being part of it.
How about the altitude change? That was interesting. That was another thing that we never had any experience. You know, the problem is you fly in high altitude
mm-hmm.
aircraft on the shuttle. You have to wear an oxygen mask because there's not enough oxygen to supply. And what can happen is if there's a failure in that oxygen system, you may, if it can create the slow failure, you won't realize what happened. It creeps up on you.
Mm-hmm.
And the symptoms, it's not like grounding where you just panic and you know it. You just feel really fine. And so you can start a posture. Feels like, so if it happens, you know what's going on, so it has all day class on it, and then we got inside this chamber,
mm-hmm.
it was, I don't know what,
mm-hmm.
7 or 8 feet long, 7 or 8 feet tall, I mean, you could walk, you could stand up, it was a cylinder, it was a long cylinder, you could
yeah,
stand up.
Yeah, because you had to duck your head to get in, because I'm running between my head walking in.
Well, that's the door, but I think, I mean, once you got
in. Again, there was, you could, oh, you could stand up and look about that.
So it had to be at least 6 feet.
But the door was under 5'8".
Yeah.
Just like in the right section, it has to be all looking different.
I don't remember seeing that in the right section.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
well,
that was the
right
section.
The
nurse kept peeking in the window.
That was different.
Oh,
that was different.
This just said in this room, and there were almost like 16 of us in there, plus a couple of doctors.
No, I think there's 16 of us.
Maybe 16 total.
Because the doctor was, there were two guys sitting with us. But the doctor was outside through some kind of pressure plug. I mean.
So you have an oxygen mask on, you breathe oxygen for half an hour. And then they sit at the pressure equivalent to sea level. And then they reduce the pressure gradually to about 5,000 feet. Make sure your ears clear if you don't want to rupture your eardrums.
Yeah.
And they bring it back down. And then they take it to 35,000. All the gas in the body expands. So, you
know. So the inside of the chamber is all gone.
Mm.
You don't have to pull it all.
There was no little vacuum in there at the time.
Once they got to that, I think it was 20,000. They stabilized the chamber 20,000 feet. And you pair it off and you take off your oxygen. One guy takes off his oxygen mask and they give you this little quiz. Says, you know, write your name, what's your age, multiply your age by 9, so, you know, add 36 to your age, you know, something, what's your address, how do you feel, do you have any symptoms, could you fly a plane at this time? Now, I was sitting next to one of the guys, and he took his mask off first, and What was his name? He wrote down his name. He got to the second question and sort of did something. He got the third question, didn't do anything. He was just sitting there with a pencil in his hand. And it was just totally gone. I mean, what happens is your whole perception tends to focus in, and your fingers can turn blue, and you get creepy sensations on your skin, but you don't feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then we turned around, and I went, and what I remember was, I said, yeah, okay, do this to everybody. I'm gonna nail this stuff. Something I'm writing my name and all this stuff, and we get down there, and says, you know, could you fly a plane at this point? You know, I was wondering. But I said, no. You know, I mean, I knew I was in bad shape, you know. I felt really good. Well, I knew I was in bad shape. But I had to put my oxygen mask back on. So I was just sitting there and just, I could fly a plane, you know. Well, I felt I was feeling real good because I had answered the question right now. I focused everything in on doing the test rather than the bigger problem of, you know, save your life. And Greg lasted longer than I did, so the instructor came along and put my mask on. And so I think he was the last one.
Yeah, but he had turned my pencil upside down, and I was writing with my eraser.
Yeah.
And you didn't know.
He just kept writing away, you know, and then he's standing away.
How come you don't know? He's just mind.
You're gone.
Yeah,
you know, Greg's writing on with the point. The guy takes the pencil out of his hand, Greg never looks up, puts it back in his hand, eraser side down, Greg just keeps writing.
And the people who are normally like that.
And then he's standing over and yelling. I mean, if I stood up and right next to him, he says, you know, I always do, number 14, you know, whatever your number was, you know, you're the pilot of the plane and you're crashing. You've got to save yourself. You've got to get your oxygen back on. You're crashing. And number 14, you hear me. He goes, you hear it. You've got to do something. And, you know, Greg's just sitting there right in the way, you know.
But it was interesting, your instincts, what they drilled into you was when this happens is to put your mask back on and make sure your oxygen is on. So I had instinctively, that was in the back of my mind, and I went, when he said, okay, put your mask back on, I went over to, I put my hand over, although it wasn't, it was half-hearted, to turn my oxygen on. So I had, so I had remembered that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he focused it, yeah, that was the thing in his mind.
I was doing it in my mind.
I was doing the quiz.
Self-preservation.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, that was really, and then after he got done with that, went up, so he talked about it. And they push in your chamber to rapid decompression, where you just, you know, it's like,
If you were in a jet, if you were in an airliner and all the windows blew out of the airliner, and all of a sudden you were.
Oh, mask still down, all that crap, you know.
The thing is don't panic, you got plenty of time.
Yeah. And it was helpful to have gone through the first one, for me, because then, you know, when you knew you had, you know, 30 seconds, and then another 2 minutes, and then four. That was plenty of time to do what you had to do.
The thing is to know that you will feel hypoxia, but don't worry about it. You've got time before it happens, and don't panic. And so that was, I think, the whole purpose of the first and the second test.
Yeah.
In situations like that, you just don't panic. Just keep it to it. Boy, you didn't tell him things.
Did anybody
tell? The guy on the other side of me did okay during the test. Yeah. I mean, when he had his mask off, when he got his mask back on, he hyperventilated.
Oh,
and
then really?
Passed
off,
and then passed.
Why is that
to help?
Specifically, why
makes a difference from
one
other satellite
to specifically designed for the
show? There were some that were designed to go up for the test,
mm-hmm.
and then there's some to
go down. For instance, the satellite called 376, which is for the shuttle that starts spinning and goes straight up, that was developed for both the Delta rocket and the shuttle. And the reason was, cover all bets, and there were Deltas around, and the shuttle looked like it might be delayed a little bit. So they developed great machines.
No.
I mean, a really nice. Yeah, I it wasn't a walk-in, it was a Sony.
You're supposed to
get
that.
Oh, right. Yeah. And so these Hughes thought and Navy wanted a satellite that would be shuttle launchable.
Uh-huh.
And so Hughes had a bus design, spacecraft design, without a payload that optimized its fitting in the payload bay. 14 feet in diameter, and launches.
Yeah.
It's not really huge. It's by, well, it's big by our brand of satellites, but in terms of how other things fit in the shuttle bay, other vehicles, because they need a, it's called an interim upper station, to get it from the shuttle to final orbit, require much bigger propulsion systems, and they're not packed in such a way as to optimize all the space we've got.
Those other satellites could go off from the ground, but this one cannot.
The other ones, the other satellites are designed more specifically to come off the ground, and what's happened is that they've taken the design that they use for expendable launch vehicles, like Titan and the Atlas and the Delta, and just said, okay, we're going to put those on shuttles, but we have to have some kind of propulsion stage to get them to where they want to go. And so what they have selected to do is take an existing design and add an augmentable propulsion stage to get it to where it wants to go. What we did with this one was to say, okay, let's throw away the concepts, let's throw away the design we had before and say, okay, we want to make it so we use up all the possible volume the shuttle will give us and try to do, and because the shuttle charges by terms of length in the payload bay and weight, you want to use as much of the volume as possible.
And much of the width.
Okay, right. So you don't want any excess. You don't want any excess length. You want to take up all the volume that you possibly can in a given length of it. And so LISAT does that. So it's specifically designed. You take a look at the form factor of LISAT. It looks like a big tuna can sitting in a long cylinder. And you take a look at the wasted space, and there isn't any.
It's interesting. I should have brought it home. There's a copy of the Johnson newspaper. And they show the payload 51E. And there's one of these Hughes 376 satellites on board. And also what's called TIGOS, the tracking and data relay satellite. And that thing takes up, must be two-thirds of the payload thing.
And that's supposed to be the one that was quite thin.
That's where the payload
is. My guess is that satellite's really no bigger than we said, in terms of on orbit weight or something.
You have to be careful because, well, you're really comparing an apple and an orange because the way they do form factor and stuff like that is really not as in frequency bands and also it's really not. It's like Tigris and it's a satellite that performs a communication function, but that's really similar. And they're both satellites and they're both different. Geostationary orbit, but their missions are entirely different.
You know, I was just looking at how they got packed in the bay and said, okay, they're both going to go to the same distance away from the Earth.
23,000. Bill's got a good tape on this for some day call over the reset, but then 6 minutes tells you everything you want to know about communication satellites.
Now, do you start spinning? Do you start?
How did you buy one?
Do you start?
If you like to come to dinner when you get back to LA, every guy can see good VCR.
If they would have brought their VCR to Houston, you could be seeing this right now. But they weren't smart enough to figure that out.
So you'll start spinning this one before it goes out.
No.
Before you deploy it.
No.
Yeah.
It could
be.
It costs.
So
the
others begin spinning.
Right.
Okay.